broadcasting from the WEEI studios. Powered by Verizon. 93.7 WEEI-FM and HD1. Lawrence, Boston. An Odyssey Sports Station.
Yeah, I mean, after, like, having some tough at-bats, I feel like, me personally, like, I'm like, all right, I have to get a hit this time instead of just thinking simple and being like, all right, just have a quality at-bat, which is more important than trying to force a hit, you know, even if it's like a walk or even hit the ball hard and maybe they make an error or something and just getting on base, just having a quality at-bat is kind of something I feel like we'll get back to soon, so I'm not too worried about us.
This is WEEI Afternoons
with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens,
and three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson on WEEI.
Hour number four here for WEEI Afternoons at Fenway Park in the Ford Clubhouse Fenway Studio, brought to you by your New England Ford dealers. Hurry in for your last chance to get employee pricing for all during the Great American Sales Event. And it is apparently Superman night here at Fenway Park.
You'll believe a man can fly.
I do. I don't know if I believe a dog can fly, but we'll get into that later.
If a man can fly, why can't a dog fly?
I don't know. It's weird.
I actually don't know the crypto origin story. Did he?
All right. We're not. There's something called a dork podcast.
Hashtag dork.
Feel free to go contact hashtag dork.
Keith, Keith, can you text me?
I may have reached out to him on Twitter already to show him my new Superman and crypto bobblehead.
So for fans on their way to the stadium tonight, if you purchase the special ticket, you get a Red Sox limited edition Superman and crypto bobblehead plus, and this is what we're on the lookout for Dan Ball. It's a little souvenir Red Sox jersey. And the T-shirt underneath is a Superman uniform.
Like Clark Kent was wearing a Red Sox jersey, and then he turned into Superman. Also, the bobblehead, we've noticed, Superman fits in on the Red Sox because he would bat lefty.
That's right.
Did we know this?
Did we know Superman was a lefty? Like, he's catching, he's got a glove on, and he's making a catch with his right hand.
And he actually caught the ball on, like,
a real
Red Sox. I
don't think he's pulling a Jim Abbott and then throwing it over to the other glove and throw it.
Not one-handed.
Well, you know what I mean, though. But yes. I'm just saying, but he moved the glove over. This took a turn.
Time now for league leaders and circling the drains as this segment circles the drains. League leaders circling drains brought to you by Drains by James. Drains by James is Eastern Mass's leader in residential and commercial drain cleaning and pipelining at drainsbyjames.com. At Drains by James, they give a poop about your pipes. And what I wanted to get into coming off that Jaron Duran quote was, I think the Red Sox are league leaders in pressure right now. And what is circling the drains is their season because of it. Did you guys listen closely to Jaron Duran? I go up there thinking, I have to get a hit right now.
Yeah.
Baseball is the worst sport to play. Maybe not worse. But when you have pressure like that and you go into something like, thinking about having to do it and the pressure of having to do it.
When the whole team is faltering.
Terrible. Terrible mentality. And we've talked about that. He just articulated what we've talked about. That some of these guys, and we use Jaron Duran as an example. Hey, why has he regressed as both a fielder and a hitter in this season? And we're like, kind of looks like he might be trying too hard to be good, trying too hard to be the centerpiece of the lineup.
Actually, this guy right here, once again, I'm going to highlight.
Dan Ball.
It's a must listen on Sunday mornings / early afternoons when the ball game takes over WEEI.
You really run with Dan Ball in your ears?
Yeah.
What's with that tone?
I'm a music guy.
No, I run with him in my heart.
Me too. They're always in my heart, Dan.
Well, better. I run with him between my legs.
Nope. We're not doing that.
What if I wore my...
Nope.
Okay.
I don't want any of you listening.
I just did.
What's your point?
No. So yesterday, I think you were making the point yesterday about it was easier perhaps for Duran to play center field and that him playing over and left because like there's the monster and then there's that wall right there that it may be in his head.
Yeah, I think.
That was a nice little working hypothesis right there.
Statistically speaking, his range going towards the foul line and towards the wall is the worst among left fielders in baseball. So I do feel like it robs him of being his wild child 110% self
right.
In some capacity when he's playing center. But he also talked about how he feels at this point that he needs to be the All-Star Game MVP every single night that he takes the field.
He does. He just can't feel that way.
Right.
You know, that makes no sense. He is right. He has eyes. He has ears. He heard and saw Rafi Devers get off the plane and people go, That's because he got traded. He's no longer on our team. He heard and saw Alex Bregman leave the lineup. He heard and saw Tristan Casas, A, stink, and then B, leave the lineup. He knows what he is. He is the best veteran player they have right now, or should be the best veteran player.
Healthy, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I get it. Like, I actually appreciate that. That's an admirable desire.
Mm-hmm.
But the execution of that on a Major League Baseball field, 4 at-bats a night, 9 innings a night, just isn't realistic. Like, I don't think that Christian Campbell was going to be better off just pressing, right? Like, or Walker Buehler. Like, Fitzy's little scenario for Walker Buehler, he gets DFA'd, he's not on the Red Sox, maybe goes to the minors with the Dodgers, and by the time the end of the season, he works his way back. Whatever. That makes sense. But just going out there, sucking, putting pressure on yourself, cracking under the pressure, that's a tough hole to dig yourself out of.
It's kind of backwards, Fitzy, where he's playing as if he needs to be the All-Star Game MVP every single night, and he's faltering, where if he just plays as Jarren Duran, he's going to turn himself back into the All-Star Game MVP. And a guy who I think that we can all admit, when he's going right, one of the best five-tool players that you see in terms of everything that he brings to the table. So it's tough. I don't know how you talk to a guy and get through to a guy who's clearly very, you know, it works through a lot of mental stuff on a daily basis, which we've acknowledged, and I give him credit for doing it. I don't know how you get through to a guy like that.
But how do you stop? The key is to, you know, breathe, take it easy, you know, realign, find your center, and stop pressing. But how do you stop pressing?
Easy for you to do, right?
Yeah, right.
Easy for everybody else other than the one person.
Yep. It's easy to say.
Right.
It's not as easy to do. Like, hey, just to aim, hey, like if I were to say to you, like, just get out there, Andy, like as you're stepping up to the tee box, like relax, the game doesn't matter. Just, you know, grip it and rip it. Like 10,000 things run through your head before you hit a golf ball. 10,000 things are probably running through this guy's head, including, why isn't my team winning? How come I'm not playing as well as I did last year? And how is this affecting my financial future?
That is a great comparison for me personally. You know, almost always my worst shot of the day is off the first tee because you're near the clubhouse and there's people watching and there's somebody looking. And you know where my best shot usually is? Like the 14th hole when you're on the far side of the course, there's nobody around. And I've given up saying, just golf's not for me. I stink. That's when I crush a drive right down dead center. But how do you do that night in, night out at Fenway Park or in a bit? You know what I mean? Like
at a major champion level, so to speak, because that's the kind of thing we're talking about.
And you know he became the All-Star and the All-Star MVP not thinking he could be an All-Star and an All-Star MVP.
What a surprise story as it was last year. Like, whoa.
Just trying to be a good player.
Probably kind of thinking he was an underdog, quite honestly.
Right.
And remember, a couple of years ago, we were all on his back and up his backside because there was the whole like, yeah, if you're not with us now, then, you know, like, don't be with us later on. And then everyone was like, oh, screw this kid. Who does he think he is? He hasn't earned the right to say that. And then he comes back there was the fly ball in the outfield that he just lost track of, and everyone's like, this kid sucks. 2 years later, he is the offense. I can't believe also at this point last year, they're 4 games over .500.
Yeah,
oh, yeah, they're much worse this year, don't worry.
They were 10 games over by the All-Star break last year. Bonkers. That's by the way, why people are giving up. When this happens year over year over year over year, and you're .500 and we keep getting the, oh, we're gonna add at the trade deadline, so don't worry, just sit tight. These guys are on their way, these prospects. When you hear that 5 years in a row, yeah, I am gonna give up earlier and earlier because I'm hearing the and seeing the exact same.
Pretty soon it's gonna go from, oh, it's Superman bobblehead in jersey night to get a crisp $100 bill at the gate night.
Please. Yeah, like those old WNBA videos where do you want a ticket or a $5 bill? And the people are like, $5 bill, please. No, and the other thing that I think is potential for people to give up sooner or to be more likely to give up is something we actually talked about late last season on the previous iteration here on WEEI Afternoons with Alex Cora. He acknowledged the fading of his teams was something he was aware of, that he starts to question, are we doing things the right way? Are we managing the season the right way? Why do my teams always fade?
Right.
So now you're telling me you're not as good at this point as you were a year ago. And historically speaking, consistently, your teams fade. Why should I think there's any hope in this season? You don't even have a buffer. If you were like 12 games over .500, you're like, now, we know they're going to fade, but hopefully the cushion is big enough so that they can still sneak in the playoffs. No, you're light years out of the playoffs, and we expect you to get worse because historically, you get worse.
Yeah, you fade every single week. You go through a quick hot streak, and then you fade almost every single week.
Yep.
And you're right back where you were. That was actually something Durant talked about in his recent interview, how the workout plans that were given to him by the Red Sox were leading to him breaking down as the season went along. So he went out, got a third-party trainer who helped him out going into 2024, and that's what led to an 160-game season, an All-Star Game MVP, and a top-10 MVP finish.
What, did he fire the guy this year? Where's the guy now?
I don't know. Unfortunately,
is that his personal driveline guy?
Maybe it's the personal anti-driveline guy.
Yeah.
I really don't know.
I just don't discount that idea. I know you brought that up, but there are a lot of these guys that have personal guys and then team guys.
Yeah.
And sometimes I do think that butting of heads, while it's not as sexy as like Tom Brady has Alex Guerrero and Bill Belichick doesn't like Alex Guerrero and Bill Belichick is loyal to Moses Cabrera. It's not as sexy as that. I think there are a lot of these guys that have those guys, and there is that sort of push and pull, and it's one thing when you're going well. Oh, I'm going well. I'm going to do driveline. I'm going to do what when it goes south. Now that other person chirping is like, told you this would never last in the big leagues. Told you you should be hitting the ball, and told you you should be doing this. And these are all, what was your phrase from earlier?
Proof of concept.
Proof of concept that when you lose, like that's what this is. When you lose, everything pops up and becomes an issue. When you win, everything gets squashed down and is quieted. On the mound tonight is a favorite of Dan Ball. Chase, don't call him Brown Burns, is a 22-year-old right-handed pitcher. Second overall pick. I love when Dan Ball does
that. Yeah, fireball a kid.
Last year, a year ago, was the number two overall pick.
That's impressive, right?
No, I do.
Okay.
I wasn't mocking you.
Oh,
you I like
do.
That you accentuated for my eyes.
Usually do. Go
Grandpa
ahead.
Grandpa looks at it and knows immediately what you're talking about there. 36.88% K rate in the minors. First six outs in his major league debut were all strikeouts. That's pretty freaking
dude, cool. Dude.
You know my theory. Remember my theory when we talked about Roman Anthony and I think special is special? That is special.
Yeah.
When you get called up and you go, why is this any different? I've pitched before. See this mound? This is 60 feet, 6 inches away, right? I'm just going to throw. You're out. You're out. You're out. You're out. You're out. You're out. Six outs in a row, strikeouts. That's special. That's
awesome. Next level special.
Now, what is the number tonight for the Red Sox strikeouts, and how do I take the over would be my next question.
I'm going to set it. Ready? I'm going to set it at 10.5.
So what is his? The problem is how long does he go? Because he went five innings last night.
What's his whip on the season?
So he only has the one start. So he went, it was six hits and three runs, but didn't walk anybody. I believe if memory serves, and I'm double checking it, his strikeout over under total is set at 5.5 for tonight.
Oh, I'm taking the over.
I would too. He had eight against the Yankees.
Yeah.
And nobody strikes out more than the Red Sox.
He got over that number in the first six batters last time.
Yeah.
Have you heard the Red Sox like to strike out even though their manager doesn't like when they strike out and you're facing this guy? Wonder if I could bet should I do both overs? Crochet and Burns?
I would.
A little parlay.
I would.
You parlay that?
I bet you the old Redropolitans are free swingers. Hello?
Sorry. I was distracted by Stiz in my ear.
What did your producer say? Don't distract the host in the middle of the show. What was it? Tell no one's listening to Stiz.
Our guy Bradfoe. Two appearances, one day. We got a little sneak peek here of his.
I love that.
You're a big fan, I know.
Yep.
Of the McFarland-sponsored 2-Minute Grill.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
In the Mass Mutual pregame show, we have a sneak peek with Alex Bregman that Stiz is going to play for us.
We want to listen to you, and you say you're almost close to 100%.
Yeah, I feel really good. Today was the best I felt during the rehab process. The fast side ran and resumed full baseball activity, so a lot of weeks ahead of what we predicted, so we're kind of taking it day by day when it comes to that, because obviously you don't want to rush it too much, but we're very far ahead of where we thought we'd be at this point.
I don't want you to rush, but I actually want you to rush, because we need your bat in the lineup. We absolutely need your bat in the lineup, Alex Bray. Weeks ahead of the timeline.
Chancey returns before the All-Star break is what was floating around Twitter.
Yeah, I'm all for it.
I thought we were all committed to like July 18th at the earliest.
I think that was a manage expectations. And I actually think it makes sense. Bring him back before the All-Star break to play a game or two.
Sure.
And then you have some time off, like see how it reacts, like deal with it. You have some time, and then boom, expect him to resume a semi-regular.
And thank God you traded Rafael Devers, because now your DH position is wide open for Alex Bregman to come back into the lineup early and not have to field while he's doing that.
Yeah. What about Yoshida?
Yeah. What about Yoshida? Are we going to see Masataka Yoshida this year?
Yes. And he's going to be a hybrid player, Alex Cora told us.
He was taking fly balls off the monster this afternoon. There's going to be such an investigation into this team after the year for injury list manipulation.
Oh, does he have?
This is wild.
The Fenway, little Fenway flu?
Oh, big time.
I just want to know. I don't even care about that. People do that.
I'm just telling you what.
I mean, I covered Bill Belichick for 20 years. That stuff happens a lot in professional sports.
All the time.
My whole thing is, a year ago, he couldn't play the field. This year, well, till he can play in the field, we can't get him back in the lineup. And I'm like, wait, you didn't want to play him in the field? You said he couldn't play outfield in Major League Baseball. Now you're trying to sell me that he is a Major League outfielder. My guess is my eyes are going to tell me that they were more right last year than this year, once I see him out there on a regular basis.
You think so?
Yes.
Even playing left field here?
Yeah, ask Aaron Duran.
Not having to show as much range.
It's supposed to be easy. It's not as easy as it looks sometimes.
Yeah, but I feel like you need less of what Duran features, which is the athleticism, and more of just the ability to read the monster, which is just kind of fielding sense.
The saving grace of left field, in my opinion, at Fenway Park, is the F-ups don't turn into, like, home runs. Where in other ballparks or other areas, even of Fenway Park, you screw up, the guy scores.
Because there's
left field, you're so close that you can screw up and it's still a double.
It'll cost you like a base, whereas you screw up, you let a ball go between your legs in center field, it rattles around that triangle.
You're toast.
That's an inside
or
the
right
park.
Field.
Or look what happened to Roman Anthony in his debut game.
Whereas in left field, we'll mock him, but really a lot of them would have been a double anyway.
And yeah.
Just like it's an uglier version of the double we should have already expected. But it's just a double, and he's on second base. Like,
perfect. Masa can do that.
So what is our level of frustration if you were Garrett Crochet? Because that's something I've thought a lot about. Like, that idea, I know what I'm supposed to be, and I know what you pay me for, and I know this comes with the territory. You're an ace. You're expected to go deeper in games. You're expected to he gives your team a chance to succeed every single game. But when you don't get wins, isn't that difficult to deal with? Like, that would bother me. Even though I'm trying to be a team player and I'm not trying to be like I'm not getting wins, a-hole mentality. Aren't you thinking that somewhere inside?
Of course. How can you not? Aren't most of these guys like hyper-competitive, or at least aren't they in this not just because they have a gift for it, but rather they like winning? They like competing? What do you think how much longer can Alex Cora and St. Bregman or anyone else keep the mood above the mood above the drowning line, above water, the Mendoza line, however you want to refer to it, in the clubhouse before eventually it just becomes, well, time to show up for another big fat L at the old ballpark.
And I know it's Dan Ball, thanks to people like you.
Okay.
I'll let that sit there for just half a second.
Proceed with caution.
Mm-hmm. Thanks to people like you, there is no elimination of like winning a Cy Young Award now when you don't win games.
No.
You know, that's 20 years ago. If you didn't win games, you didn't win the Cy Young Award.
Yeah.
It didn't matter your ERA, your strikeouts, your innings pitch. Now
you can have a 500 record.
He can be probably sub 500. He could probably be sub 500, lead the league in strikeouts and innings with an ERA that's like 2 and win a Cy Young. And I get that. But also, you still want a W. You still want a win attached not only to your name, more importantly, you know, they have this stupid happy flight thing. How about happy night? How about go home? How about go get a beer and a steak feeling like, I won the game today. I did what we needed to do, and then we finished the job, and I gave it to Chapman, and we put it away. Like, that has to be infuriating. Like, it just, I wouldn't deal with it well. I know I wouldn't.
I would imagine, I mean, that game against the Yankees that we saw here a couple Fridays ago, where it's a 1-0 game. He is shoving, and then he gives up a moonshot to Aaron Judge. And what was it?
You got him three times.
Right. Yeah.
Struck him out three times, fourth one. Put 97 on the corner, but it's Aaron Judge. He's gonna do that to you. But that was oh my God, that's when I thought this season was gonna be different.
This is
there's no reason it should have come to that.
Right.
So it's things like that will make the one Miller Lite become two.
But or three, or four.
Yeah.
Or six. But this is I'll go back to, I always said this about Peyton Manning when he had bad defenses. And
We had some protection problems out there today?
No. What I said earlier in the show, that whole theory in New England that Tom Brady lived early in his career, no one ever lost for punting. Well, you didn't because you have good defense, good special teams. Peyton Manning went into certain games at certain times in his career knowing, if I punt, we lose because the other team is going to score almost every time they have the football.
That was the whole Belichick mentality facing Peyton Manning.
And I think that's how Garrett Crochet feels. And we talk about the pressure with Jarren Duran. I need to get a hit every time up. It's the same thing for Crochet. I think he firmly believes if I give up a run, I might lose. And you shouldn't feel that way. You should feel like if I go out there and give up three or fewer, I gave our team a great chance to win the game. If you give up three runs as Garrett Crochet, that's disappointing, right?
I mean, I don't see any signs of the Duran stuff in Garrett Crochet. Thank God, by the way. But
No, because he's better. He's dealing with it better.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it's the same situation. The pressure is there.
Right.
He's just either more talented or more mentally attuned to his own expectations to deal with it. But it's the same. I think when he goes, oh, it's 0-0 in the seventh or something, like, they're probably not going to score tonight, so I can't let the other team score.
I get a pretty big IDGAF vibe from Garrett Crochet, just about any of it. I honestly don't think that any of this seems to really bother him all that much.
Okay.
Seems unflappable-ish.
And the reason I say that is because we had the conversation, we were here, Fitzy, you, me, and Mego, on that Friday of the game that we just talked about, and Crochet was coming off of giving up five against the Yankees. So our conversation was, well, gee, guys, what happens if he's the Garrett Cole of the Red Sox and he can't face the Yankees? What does that mean for being a Red Sox ace?
Yep.
And then he shoved it where the sun doesn't shine on them up until that last at-bat against Aaron Judge. So, luckily, thank God, and it's one of the few players where you can see it, it looks like that kind of pressure and him being an ace of the Red Sox and not getting any run support hasn't impacted him
yet. So we got one.
Y-E-T yet.
We got one.
It's going to wear him. It's got to wear you down, though.
That's how I feel about it, but we got one for
now. I
don't
think it's there yet.
We just need 25 more of those for a full baseball team. 617-779-7937, talking a little Red Sox here, but more importantly, we're leading into Fitzy's favorite time of the week. It's 5:30.
And I guarantee you this one, it's going to be action-packed.
An action-packed edition of the Fitzy 5. That's up next here on WEEI Afternoons. And now, the guy who just sang the Fitzy 5 intro, Dan Ball, has what's trending.
Your home of the Sox. Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
After the ad read with the meow, I was prepared for anything. Here's what's trending now on WEEI and WEEI.com. Brought to you by Prudential Center, located in the heart of Back Bay. Features over 70 shops and eateries. Discovery at the center of it all. The Red Sox fell to the Toronto Blue Jays yesterday afternoon at Fenway Park. Boston now welcomes the Cincinnati Reds to Fenway for a three-game series as their homestand continues. First pitch of Game 1 is set for 7:10. It's Garrett Crochet opposite rookie Chase Burns. Here's your lineup for tonight. Jarren Duran leads off in left, and it's Roman Anthony, your DH. Abraham Toro is at first with Carlos Narvaez, your catcher. Willy Abreu out right. Trevor Story at short. Marcelo Meyer is back at third. He was activated from the bereavement list earlier today with Nick Sogard sent back down to AAA. Then it's David Hamilton at second, and Seydon Rafaela in center field batting ninth. Also from today, the Red Sox reinstated right-handed pitcher Jordan Hicks from the 15-day injured list. He will wear number 46. To make room, Boston optioned right-handed pitcher Zach Kelly back down to Worcester. And from our own Rob Bradford, Alex Bregman says there is a chance that he returns to the team before the All-Star break. You can listen to tonight's game, meanwhile, on WEEI FM 93.7 and across the Shaw's and Star Market WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. Shaw's perfecting the art of fresh. Mass Mutual pregame show with Joe Weil is tonight at 6:10. And Will Fleming and Will Middlebrooks have the call of the game. The Bruins have announced a number of signings over the last 24 hours. Among those, Marat Khuznadinov signs a two-year extension. Michael Callahan, a one-year, two-way deal. Henry Yokiharyu, 3 years at $3 million per season. Johnny Beecher, a one-year extension. Goaltender Michael DiPietro signs a two-year deal. And Morgan Geekie signs a six-year contract extension worth $5.5 million per season. NHL free agency opens up tomorrow at noon. NBA free agency, meanwhile, opens up tonight at 6 o'clock. At this time, teams can start negotiating with all free agents, but contracts cannot be officially signed until July the 6th. Luke Kornet and Al Horford headline the Celtics pending free agents. Head to Fenway for the game this evening. Park in Prudential Center's garage for just $25 for night and weekend games. Located in the heart of Back Bay, shop, dine, and discover all Prudential Center has to offer, including the View Boston Observation Deck. Just a short walk over to Fenway from the Pru. I'm Dan Ball. This is Trending Now on WEEI and WEEI.com. More Afternoons Live at Fenway Park coming up right after this.
One of these guys won three Super Bowls.
Ted Johnson here. I mean, he has one of the biggest necks that I've ever seen.
The other two cheered him on in their mom's basement.
Now, sit on Uncle Andy's lap here in Tankathon Nation.
Afternoons with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson on WEEI.
We got a little non-sounder-worthy breaking news here on WEEI Afternoons, heading into the Fitzy Five. Before we get to the Fitzy Five, we're going to ask Fitzy, because he doesn't know. Something just came across our Twitter feeds, breaking news.
Oh.
Brad Marchand.
Oh.
Has a team for the future. Who is it, and how much did he get in terms of the year and the money in the contract? I want you to guess.
I will go Utah Mammoth, 2 for $20.
You would be so wrong. He is staying with the Florida Panthers.
Oh, wow.
6 years.
Huh?
At about $32 million, so about $5.33 per year.
That is going to be such a kick in the cookies for all Bruins fans. Oh, that sucks. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
6 years, $32 million. It only took just a little over $5 million a year.
But 6 years.
That sucks.
6 years.
That is a
I think wait, he looks a little old now.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to play six two of those.
6 years for now. No, he'll play more than that, but it is going to be three, diminishing maybe? Returns.
Wow.
But I'll tell you what he might also be doing. Hoisting another cup at some point in the next year or two with the Florida Panthers, who are loading up to be a dynasty.
Yeah, I mean, when you've won back-to-back and you're the odds-on favorite to win three in a row, that's dynastic.
They signed Bennett and Ekblad as well, so they've done all their, business and kept it under the salary cap.
So he took less saying, you know what, I like playing hockey in Florida, even though there's literally no ice that doesn't come out of an ice box in the state of Florida, no hockey heritage, but a winning team. And by the way, the party was pretty lit.
Brad Marchand has his name.
Damn,
on the cup.
Damn, all Bees fans, I'm sorry.
Going to have his name on the cup potentially again. So yeah, tough news for Bruins fans, tough news for me. I know I thought there was really hope that he might come back. But good news is, pretty sure they can't afford David Pastrnak. So those rumblings out of Europe about Pasta going to the Panthers, I think were much ado about nothing. He will be staying with an A on his chest for the Boston Bruins.
He got a Morgan Geeky deal, but he's Brad Marchand. Wow.
But he's 172.
He's, give or take a year.
All right, Fitzy, it's that time. It's Monday. It's 5:30. It's time for the Fitzy Five.
And now we go deep inside the mind of a mad fan.
In case you haven't noticed, I'm weird. I'm a weirdo.
Where we rank him up, or is it count him down? Doesn't really matter either way. Here's the Fitzy Five.
Fitzy Five!
Yes, that's right. Mondays at 5:30 mean many things, but most especially here on Afternoons, it's time for the Fitzy Five, where I run down five things in some sort of random order that I'm currently obsessing over. Now, Andy, what week is it?
Five.
No, it is the 4th of July week.
I wasn't sure. I was like,
your answer to what week is it was five.
There was a theme here.
Was trouble paying attention something you often saw in your report cards?
4th of July week. I love 4th of July.
I know you do, right?
And you know what somebody brought to my attention?
What?
Real quick.
Mm-hmm.
We love fireworks on 4th of July, right?
Yes.
This could be the final pre-tariff firework year.
Ooh,
fireworks could go through the roof next year.
Stock up.
Uncalled for. That is often what they do.
Literally and metaphorically.
Bad if you shoot them off inside.
I know. You got to go up to New Hampshire to get the good ones, though. Down in southern New England, meh. But at least they give the kids a show. Anyway, it is 4th of July week, of course. We love we love celebrations, symbols of patriotism, Americana. It's also a week where we celebrate heroes, action heroes, the ones who delivered us from the tyranny of England, delivered us from the oppression of King George, the Mad King, as we establish this. The greatest cream cheese filled nation on planet Earth. So that's why today, in celebration of the 4th of July, and what an action packed week it is, we are going to count down Fitzy's five favorite terrible action movies that feature former athletes.
Wow, I didn't see that coming. I didn't know where this was going until you literally finish the sentence laid out one word after another. Usually you see where it's going. Yep. I didn't see it. You button hooked me.
Yeah.
All right. Now I was going to do. I have one.
I was going to do Fitzy's five favorite movies that feature former professional athletes, but there's just too many.
I like this one.
Just too
bad
many.
Ones.
But these are great bad movies that are super fun to watch.
Let's go.
Right. So tied at number five because there's just also too many and I love them
Ted
all
Johnson
so much.
In
1978. Bruce Lee, who had sadly passed away 5 years prior. Some footage from the movie was reconstituted into 1978's Game of Death, where in the final scene he fights none other than Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
I am not familiar, but it seems like something I need
it
to see.
It sucks. It is the worst movie ever.
Is it CGI?
No, because they didn't have CGI.
That's what I thought.
Then. No, they actually shot some new scenes, kind of the same way, sadly, they had to do something similar with The Crow when Brandon Lee passed away, and they shot like a body double and whatnot. This movie is so unbelievably bad.
How bad is it?
It's unwatchable, but at the same time, it's amazing. And it does feature Kareem Abdul-Jabbar fighting Bruce Lee. So tied at five, Game of Death with this one. Hit the audio, Stiz.
Name, Kurt Thomas. His title, three-time world gymnastics champion. His assignment, a secret mission for the United States government. His only weapon, himself.
That's right. From 1985, fresh off the United States men's Olympic team winning the all-around gold medal in Los Angeles, several people, including Mitch Gaylord from American Anthem, a terrible movie as well, and Kurt Thomas got his own Hollywood action movie called Gymkata.
So, no, it wasn't. It was called Gymkata.
4.4 of 10 on IMDb, 17% on Rotten Tomatoes. Truly one of the worst movies I have ever sat through. He defends himself from an attack of a bunch of ninjas in a village in insert name of Eastern European country where there happens to conveniently be an uneven bar and a pommel horse in the middle of the
No rings from the ceiling or anything?
It's so bad.
Good Lord.
But it's absolutely spectacular. We exercised a lot of bad judgment in the 80s where a lot of these come from. All right, let's move to number four, Stiz.
The Brotherhood. They're an underworld on wheels. They answer to no law. They live by one rule.
God forgives. The Brotherhood doesn't.
There's only one man tough enough and crazy enough to take them on.
You just picked up the wrong passenger, buddy.
He's an undercover cop doing a good job with a bad attitude.
You know what movie this is, Andy? From 1991.
Every 80s movie.
Every 80s movie would be a great guess. Coming in at number four would be none other than the Boz, Brian Bosworth in Stone Cold.
Oh, I saw that. I absolutely saw that.
Such a piece of garbage.
I loved Bob. Not great movie. He's much better in the Dr. Pepper commercials.
Much better in the Dr. Pepper commercials.
He's evolved as an actor.
He has stars the great Lance Henriksen as well. He has to infiltrate the biker gang.
Yep.
In the end, spoiler alert, he does, and a lot of people die in the process. All right, now, number three. This is an all-timer.
One ugly mother...
Come on, you got to know what that's from, Andy. That's one of the greatest lines in action movie history. This isn't necessarily a bad movie, but it's super fun and kind of dumb.
Men in Black?
Really not a good guess at all. No, Andy, you're one ugly mother blanker. Starring, of course, former football player and nemesis to Rocky Balboa, Carl Weathers, who played, of course, Carl
Predator.
Yes, Predator. Very good job.
I nailed
Andy.
It.
Let's go, Andy.
There you go. That's right. Carl Weathers. Come on, yeah, you know that.
I don't think I've seen Predator.
You know, wait, hold on a second.
Put it on the list. You never saw Ted's other movie.
Are you kidding? You never saw Predator? Some would consider that one of the 10 greatest action movies.
Of course. I don't have all these top 10 lists of action movies and everything else.
You got Jesse Ventura in that movie. You got Carl Weathers.
Elm.
Whatever. All right, moving on. Number two.
Hey, Killian! Here is Sub-Zero. Now... Plane Zero.
Another movie that also stars Arnold Schwarzenegger. This is my favorite Arnold Schwarzenegger film by a country mile. Hint, the villain in this movie was an iconic American game show host.
I have no idea.
Remake of it has just been finished filming. The trailer comes out tomorrow, starring Glenn Powell, directed by Edgar Wright. Oh. It's also based off of a Stephen King novel, and it is The
Running Man.
Oh, Dan Ball, you're my new hero, The Running Man. Are you kidding? Ben Richardson, The Butcher of Bakersfield. You've never seen this movie either?
Add it to the list.
Right now, somewhere, Ted Johnson is rolling in his non-grave. He's probably like working out extra hard
just
now.
Just add it to the list.
Oh,
we're
my
doing
God.
Ted's little movie club. Every week we watch a movie he makes us watch.
All right.
Last of the Mohicans was this week. We'll talk about it later in the week.
Game of Death and Gymkhana tied for 5. Stone Cold at 4. Predator at 3. Number 2, The Running Man. And my favorite all-time action movie starring former professional athletes is...
All present and accounted for, Major.
Blimey, they're filthy.
They may be, lady, but they sure do mean well.
Hey,
They're more than just filthy, Andy. They're dirty. Maybe the most iconic dad movie of all time. Every kid gets sat down and they're young and their dad shows them like the gun, Force 10 from Navarone, the guns of Navarone. Every Clint Eastwood Western, and you have to see... Starring the great James Brown, who was also in The Running Man.
Dirty Harry. I don't
oh,
know
so close.
About.
The Dirty Dozen.
Oh, The Dirty Dozen. Yeah. Haven't seen it.
Oh, my God.
We should just rename this segment. Movies Andy
hasn't
seen.
Actually, the Fitzy Five should just now be called Movies Andy Hasn't Seen.
So you left one off that I thought for sure
Wait,
would be on there.
I also have some honorable mentions.
Okay.
Like, of course, Broken Arrow with John.
Howie Long.
Yeah, so Howie yes. Long and yeah, Howie Has Long and John Travolta. That's a great movie. Yeah. It's super dumb, but at
I
the
think
same time.
He actually
time,
had two, because didn't he have like a Firestorm one?
He did. That movie's unwatchable.
Yeah. I think
it's
that
like
was straight to
It's
TV.
Not, no, actually, Fire Chasers or Wood Choppers.
Yeah.
Or, yeah. Good. Like, see, it either has to be great, like Predator and the Running Man, iconic Dirty Dozen, or so bad you can't not watch it, like having bologna and whipped cream for dinner.
Not just regular bad?
No.
Those were just regular bad.
Super bad.
Yeah.
So once again, Fitzy's 5 favorite movies, which actually was 6, that star former American athletes, Game of Death tied with Gymkhana for 5, Stone Cold starring Brian Bosworth, Predator featuring the likes of Jesse Ventura and Carl Weathers, and Arnold Schwarzenegger. Number 2, The Running Man with Jim Brown, Arnold Schwarzenegger and Jesse Ventura, and number 1, The Dirty Dozen.
That was Fitzy's 5, and reminder, we did all get the assignment from Professor Ted and the movie review crew that this week we were watching Last of the Mohicans.
Did That's you right. watch it?
I have watched it. Dan Ball has started it. And I
You
know
only
the rest
started
of the
it?
Clue. The rest
how could you not finish that movie upon first viewing?
I did. I realized I was not capable of paying attention last night. I wanted to start it with a clean slate so yes. I can fully pay
it's
attention.
Clean slate.
Are we sharing our ranking system or should we share it when we rank?
Nope. We'll do that later in the week when Ted Johnson is here. It's his little club. But if you want to prepare for that and you haven't seen Last of the Mohicans, listeners, go out, watch it. It is indeed available on Disney+/Hulu. You log in, you watch it. Hour 47. It's a great time. Have a couple beers.
And what did you, the cinematography, the acting, the music.
You want me to preview?
No.
All I'll say to any audience member currently listening, if you really want to see a great action movie, obviously it's Predator, The Running Man. If you want to see a great American movie, it's The Dirty Dozen. If you want to watch the biggest piece of crap you've ever seen, you have to watch Gymkhana.
Okay. I might look for Gymkhana on a streaming service. See, it's available. It's probably on YouTube. It's probably not even on a streaming service. Up next here on WEEI Afternoons, we react to Brad Marchand re-signing with the Panthers. He got 6 years. Can you believe it, people? Brad Marchand and the Panthers keeping it together for another cup run. We'll talk about that next on Odds and Ends here on WEEI Afternoons.
This is WEEI Afternoons
with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy-Stevens, and Ted Johnson.
WEEI Afternoons at Fenway Park in our Ford Clubhouse Fenway Studio, brought to you by your New England Ford dealers. Hurry in for your last chance to get employee pricing for all during the Great American Sales Event. Coming up on Odds and Ends here on WEEI Afternoons, brought to you by Cars for Kids, your trusted charity for car donations. Also accepts donations of boats, RVs, motorcycles, and real estate. Call today, 877-CARS-FOR-KIDS. That's Cars with a K. Brad Marchand has decided that he enjoyed life in Florida so much, winning a cup, celebrating a cup, sitting on the back of a golf cart with a cup, a coffee, a drink, a sunscreen, like
crowd surfing
everything.
At a bar, leading chants on a balcony, denting the cup, breaking the cup,
I don't think it was just him.
Yeah, but I mean, he was part of it.
You can't blame him for everything. I think
he was
other
party
Panthers
to
were
some
involved.
Of the celebration. I don't blame him. I don't blame him for two things. One, living as outrageously as he just did. with the Florida Panthers, Stanley Cup champions, back-to-back, and the Stanley Cup, and two, re-signing with them.
No. I got no problem with it. You go to Florida.
Seems like that is a great coach, Class A organization. It sucks to say this because that's the biggest rival of the Boston Bruins and maybe Boston sports at large right now, but they're doing everything right.
Yeah, I'm not sure they're a rival because right now, hammer, nail. Boston is the nail. Panthers are the hammer. Let's go to the phone line, 617-779-7937. David in the car wants to react to this late-breaking Brad Marchand news. What's up, David?
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you. It is a slap in the face to New England, to any Bruins fans, because, you know, they ran them out of town. And I don't think people realize that it's very possible that they could do a three-peat. They have the team for it. They have the coaching staff, you know, and they have good players. I have friends that live down in Florida, and they were so excited when Marchand signed with them. And they rubbed it in my face, you know, after they won the cup. You know, you guys gave them up, you idiots. I mean, and this is sad to say, but this is typical New England. They make the wrong moves all the time. They never do the right moves. They've done over and over again with the Sox, with the Celtics, with the Red Sox, I mean, with the New England. And it's pathetic. It's pathetic.
All right, thanks for the call, David. That went down a road of negativity that I didn't really see coming. Let's stick to this, Brad Marchand. Is it more or less regrettable now that you traded Brad Marchand?
This, at least for me, Fitzy, this didn't change a thing for me.
Okay.
I never thought he was coming back.
No, I didn't regret it when
me either.
I didn't regret it when you traded him. I didn't regret it when he won a cup, and I don't regret that he signed an extension and is going to go try to win a Stanley Cup in Florida.
Yeah, you made a decision.
Yeah.
You made a decision at where you were as a hockey team in regards to the totality of the team, not just Marchand. I know he's the face. You made a lot of moves. You made a decision that you needed to reload, retool, rebuild, whatever. You'll get a first-round pick in 2072 for him or whatever the year is when that comes.
Give or take a year. Yeah.
Give or take a year.
Yeah, sure.
And you just drafted a guy with the 7th overall pick. Like, you're in a different spot. It's one of those things, you hate to say it, Brad Marchand didn't and doesn't make sense for the Boston Bruins where they are in their, what did Mayo use? Remember when the Bills added somebody and Mayo was like, yeah, he doesn't really fit our timeline or our cycle or something. And it's like, Brad Marchand doesn't fit the Bruins right now.
The moment that you made the decision, we're going to sell at the trade deadline. This championship window that was so much fun is over. Brad Marchand didn't fit with the Bruins anymore. He was an extraneous piece, and he, unfortunately, became an asset for you. And you did what you had to do, and you got value back. You did get that first-round pick. I know it's forever and ever amen away, but hopefully you can turn around and use that to acquire a valuable asset for this year. But at worst, you'll make a pick. You'll get a young kid. It had to happen.
These are his Tom Brady on the Bucks years.
Yeah.
First year there, went down, obviously. The funny thing is the Bruins actually got something for this Tom Brady, if you will, in a first-round draft pick next year. That's fine. But it's just not part of what the Bruins are trying to do. I'm not even really entirely sure what the Bruins are trying to do right now. They did luck into Higgins, which is great. Your guy, that's terrific. But
he'll play for them.
The Bruins are not even anywhere near close to contending the way Florida is as an early prohibitive, if not cup favorite next year.
And does this also, are Bruins fans now more likely to root for the Panthers? Like, now that this is a long-term thing, does that ease things at all as he goes for a third cup down there? They are a dynasty. Because I don't fault him. Like, when you go and you win, and then you're like, wait, you can play hockey inside a building that's cold, but when you go outside, it's not cold outside year-round, and it can be nice. And
Florida's a hell of a drug, Andy, I'm telling you.
Well, that's
and
what
I look
I mean.
At my state tax return, I'm like, oh, there's nothing here.
Oh, yeah, by the way, $32 million over 6 years, that's probably about 45 up here.
Right, so I don't really hold any. I may not have liked Brad Marchand and some of the things he did and said on his way out the door, but since leaving, I don't fault him for anything.
Nope.
He went to a good team.
Yep.
He fit in nicely. He had fun. He won a cup. He likes all those other guys. He made more money. He lives in hot weather. It's like, yeah, things. The one thing I will say is he wanted to be there. He wanted to be traded there, and now he wants to stay there. And that's fine. Like, it worked out for him.
Should he have wanted to have been traded someplace that sucked?
No. Not at all. And I also get that, you know, sports rivalry hate and all that changes when you're not playing the team and when you're just looking for a new team to go to. And we may maintain a certain hate for a team or a city or an organization. If he's just looking for the best place to go, Florida is really high on the list.
Yeah, absolutely. They play the exact style that he wants to play, something that unfortunately he had to see when he was on the wrong side of it playing for the Bruins.
Correct.
It's a great financial situation. The weather's fantastic. Clearly, it seems like he likes a lot of the guys that are around there. And it's not a Red Sox-Yankees goes back to the Babe Ruth deal kind of rivalry. It's a rivalry that is not nearly as long as the Bruins' career of Brad Marchand is. So right. I don't fault him. He got his cup. I'm less inclined to root for him now because he did get his cup as the hired gun in the year where he started as a Boston Bruin. But yeah, I'm not too.
All right, Brad Marchand gets 6 years, $32 million to stay with the Florida Panthers. And we get Garrett Crochet on the mound tonight here at Fenway Park. Tito Francona, Alex Cora, Garrett Crochet, Burns for the Reds. My one parting gift. Take the over on strikeouts tonight. The Red Sox strike out a ton. Crochet strikes out a lot of K's tonight if you're watching at Fenway Park. And enjoy your bobbleheads and Superman jersey if you got one. That's going to do it for WEEI Afternoons. We'll be back tomorrow back in our beautiful Brighton studio powered by Verizon. We will have Ted Johnson at 3 o'clock. I think we'll have Take Tuesday, something new we're going to unveil here.
We're executive decisioning a quiz with Stiz tomorrow.
Oh, that's right. Short week, holiday week. These guys get some time off on Thursday. So quiz with Stiz will be the reigning undefeated champion, Ted Johnson, against Nick Fitzy Stevens. We'll have Patriots talk, football at 4, all that and more. Red Sox, for God's sakes, get a win. I'm just going to keep saying that. That's going to do it. WEEI Afternoon. Stick around for the Mass Mutual pregame show. That's up next.
Hey, Jordan, you're so fine. You're so fine. You blow my mind. Hey, Jordan.
Uncalled for.